Welcome to Tips from the Server Room. This podcast is designed for all you systems admins, network specialists, or the guys and gals out there in the office who handles it all. Sit back, relax, grab a beverage, and enjoy Tips from the Server Room. Yes, my friends, welcome back once again to Tips from the Server Room. This is episode number 71 for November the 18th, 2014. I'm your host, Jack, and I'm here to bring you through that world of all those magical servers, all things connected, everything fiber optics, network cables, servers, switches, and all of the goodness that we have to deal with. Folks, I'd like to tell you that this show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast. If it's tech, it's here. Check out all the great shows at techpodcast.com. Also, the show is now on stitcher.com. If you'd like to check out this show and many, many other tech shows, you can check that out on Stitcher. Well, many other podcasts, I should say, on Stitcher. You can check those out by downloading the app to your smartphone today. Both iOS and Android is covered. Folks, I've had a lot of people out there inquiring about the live classes, and I told you the live classes are going on now, and they're going well. I mean, we're doing pretty good with the live classes. I did have an email recently that says, Jack, did you hit your maximum of 15 people? We did not for this class. We actually hit a maximum of 10 people, but they're all doing rather well. The live classes are happening now. I'm planning on starting another one beginning in January or February. So it'll be another class. It'll be the same way. So if you're interested, please get those emails in. Once again, that course is slated to probably still come in at the price point that we charged these folks, and we charged everybody. It's $500 for the live class. You can email me at jackstechcorner@gmail.com. Love to hear from you, and then we can discuss it more if you're interested. Also, please check out this website, tipsfromtheserverroom.com. Where you can comment on these shows. You can also leave me a voice message at 724-701-0550. Once again, that's 724-701-0550. We'd love to hear from you. If you have any questions or ideas for future shows, you can please email those into me to jackstechcorner@gmail.com. And please follow me on Twitter, and that is at Technoman. Folks, I told you last week, about the tablet, the Toshiba 7-inch tablet that I picked up. Really, really good deal. It's about $109. Could be a little cheaper right now, maybe about $104. The tablet is very solid. It seems like a really good tablet. I haven't had any trouble with it. It comes with the full Windows 8.1 Professional. Either you like it or you don't. But now I can tell you in its defense, Windows 8 or 8.1 is it's a lot more comfortable on a touch screen. I know I've tried using it with a mouse, and it's not too comfortable with a mouse. With a touch screen, it's pretty nice because you can slide things and use gestures, and it just simply works like it should work. I actually started creating some apps, some mobile apps. I do a little bit of app developing. We talked about that before. So the opener of the show, you actually heard, it was being played off of that 7-inch tablet. I wrote an app that I'm working on. I'm in development stages. It's an early prototype for podcasters. So if you're a podcaster and you're looking for a great app, let me know. And when I get it done, we'll discuss it. And we'll talk about how you can get a copy of that. Let me think. What else happened this week? I ordered another tablet. I don't know if I'm going tablet-centric or what I'm doing. I don't even know what I'm looking for. My wife said, what are you looking for buying all these tablets? I said, I don't know. But, you know, as a technologist, you just have to play with stuff and fill it out a little bit. And it's nice to have a tablet with you when you're on jobs because it's, you know, the phone's okay for looking up quick information. I've done that a lot. I've even used Zoho invoicing. I could, like, write my invoice right there at the client's work site. And I can email it to them. So before I leave, they actually have a copy of their invoice, which is nice because if there's any questions, they can ask you about that right away. And once again, that Zoho Invoicing is what I use. It's a great little online company. I don't know if you ever heard of them, Zoho, but they have not millions, a lot of apps. They have a lot of apps that they created and developed. And it was kind of even before Google Docs happened. So they've been around for quite a while. Check them out. The Zoho, the invoicing is free up to a certain number of clients, and then you have to start paying. So you might want to check that out. But the tablet I bought now, I think it's a knockoff of Asus. It's called a Nextbook. It's Nextbook. And believe it or not, I did buy it from Walmart. I'm sorry. I always tell people you shouldn't buy your computers where you buy your toilet paper and your motor oil for your car. They shouldn't be selling computers. But I found a really, really good deal on their website, and I thought I would pick it up. And it's been pretty nice. It comes with a built-in or a keyboard, and the top of the tablet magnetizes to the keyboard. It just drops right in this little groove. You close it, and it looks very much like a laptop. It works like a laptop. It works like a laptop. It thinks like a laptop, but it's a tablet. You pull it out, and then you have a full Windows 8.1 professional tablet on a 10.1-inch screen. So I like the screen size a lot better than the 7-inch. But then again, it's just, I don't know what I'm looking for. I mean, because, I have iPads, iPhones, and, everything in between. But I guess you're always just looking for that next big thing, that next big invention. So there's a couple ideas for you there, a couple gift-giving Christmas ideas. I would tell anybody this Toshiba tablet, and if your kids are looking for a tablet, or even your wife or your spouse, going to read on it, or and I can honestly say, and I think Paul Thurrott said this, if you watch Twit, Paul Thurrott on Windows Weekly, said that the Kindle app on Windows, absolutely, it bites. I just can't put it any other way to you. There's no politically correct way to say it. The Kindle app is horrible. So I looked the other day, I thought, well, if they give out the APIs, I'll write one. I wanted to create a new Kindle experience, and they don't release the API to just anybody. So, and I guess I'm just anybody, so I can't get the APIs to attach to their services to write a new Kindle app. But yeah, the Windows app is nasty. The iOS app is beautiful, works great. So it's just something to think about. That's one app, but everything else works great on it. I mean, I've been installing software. I installed Audacity on it. I bought one of these things. It's called a micro USB to a standard USB little cable from StarTech for like $1.99. And it will even power a USB microphone. So if you're into podcasting or recording your audios, for $100, you can have a mobile podcasting studio. So it's pretty cool. Anyway, so let's move on and move up. Tonight I got three different subjects we're going to be talking about here. And the reason is just because it's coming back from clients. Because I've been working with a ton of clients, it just seems like I've been getting overwhelmed with, so much work lately. And not just a full-time gig, but, then at night I come home and I get the nighttime gig that I have to deal with too. And now I'm lining up stuff on the weekend, so I got weekend gigs going on. And whatever that means, but you know what? It's a holiday season. We're all trying to make a little bit extra cash. It never hurts to make a little bit extra money anytime you can. So I say if you're in this business, pick up a little bit extra work on the side. Why not? Make sure your neighbors know that you, work as a technologist, you do computer work, and maybe you can find some extra stuff to pick up there. But these are actually medical clients. I got a lot of medical clients. And I don't specialize in any one field. I like medicine. I like medical clients. And I like law firms is another client that I really like working with. It's just that's kind of my niche that I like dealing with. And then when you can get it, if I can get consulting work in the education field, I take that also. So if you're in any of them fields and you need me, look me up. You can definitely find me. But today, the first thing we're going to talk about here is the way to connect multiple network cards to your RDP, your remote desktop server, to serve up different aspects of one remote desktop server. Now, if that sounds confusing, it was for me also. And the reason I say it was confusing is most times, right, we hook up one NIC, we have one IP address for our RDP server, and we normally log into that, and we set the clients up to log into that, and it's always worked. But I've been working with a vendor here lately, and this is one of those stories like kind of from the trenches, right? So while working with the client, we had a chance to set up remote desktop server with two NICs. Now, we talked about using two NICs in a server. Hell, we got some servers with eight NICs in the server itself. And you can assign those to different virtual machines or do different things with those NICs. But what this vendor wanted us to do was interesting because he wanted us to set up the two NICs and have two different IP addresses. On the first NIC we set up, and if you go to your remote desktop configuration, in the configuration part of it, there is a site that says configure connections. And you can build your own connections. You can have multiple connections in there based on different properties to different applications. Folks, this is just pretty cool to do. And I was going to demonstrate tonight, and the server's not really going my way here on my virtual server. So we are just going to talk through this and just kind of give you the idea of it, and then you go look at it. And then you'll be able to do it also. It won't take you long to figure it out and how to set that up. So what we're going to talk about here is not being able to find a pen in your studio. No, I'm not going to talk about that. Anyhow, what we're going to talk about actually is setting up that multiple connections. So what he wanted us to do, and it makes so much sense, and I'll be setting up all my remote desktop servers this way, is the one side. You set the one side up, and what you set that up for is your management. So when we log into it, we take the one IP address and we log into a remote desktop, just like you would with your RDP client on your workstation. And we log into that server and we do, what we need to do. We do our work and then we get out. What the other NIC is for, you give it a different IP address. And on that IP address, what you do is you give that IP address out to your users that's going to be using the application on that particular RDP server. And what's neat about it is in the configuration, if you click on the application tab, you can put the path of the application in there and the starting path of the application. Now, why is that so important? You're going to say, Jack, wait a minute. I've been doing this for years, and you can just put that on the client computer. Folks, I've been doing it the same way. I told the guy, we just put that on the client computer, the path, they double-click. Most users will never know that it's there, and they think that's just the way the remote desktop connector works, right? They double-click it. They go right into the application. They think that's the way it's supposed to work. In reality, if somebody would edit their desktop connection and remove the application path, what's going to happen at that point is they will be able to go right in and have server access. Now, I know you're going to say, Jack, well, they don't have permissions to really do anything. That's okay. I don't want people at my desktop on my servers. They don't need to be there. That's for me to do. And all we want to do is direct them directly into the application. So to do that, you click on your configure connections. You would click on setup. First, you'd set up the management connection and then set up another connection and give it the name of the application that you're going to be allowing people to hit that server for with RDP connection. Once you do that, you set them up with this, you go into the, it'll say network card or NIC. Pick the network card that has the proper IP address on it. And we even named the second NIC. We renamed it to the name of the application. And it just makes things a lot smoother. Once you do that, you can actually save that. You don't have to reboot the server or do anything fancy like that. You just save it. And now you go out, you can give somebody the IP address. Say, look, that IP address is 192.168.1.10. They type that in. They double click. Boom. They log in. They go right in and they go right into their application. That's where you want them to be. Now that we got that out of the way, hopefully you understand how to do that. The client also was saying, Jack, that server back here where our virtual machines are. He didn't say it that way. He just said the server back here. And I'm telling you, that's where the virtual machines are. Started the other day to make a real loud squealing sound. Well, that kind of alarms me, saying it's either a hard drive fan or a CPU fan normally. Because, the bearings can be shot, something can happen. Anyway, something was squealing on the server. Something was going on. And he was pretty concerned that it may be actually dying. I mean, so it's one of those servers that we kept putting Band-Aids on because, the clients don't have a lot of cash flow for technology. And, when have you ever walked into one of your clients, they said, hey, Bob, I got all the cash flow for technology you will need. Buy whatever you want. No, 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 no. They want us to put Band-Aids on things, cranks on them, hook them to generators, do whatever you can do to keep that server from 1968 running, and they want the most, the hottest software on it, the best package of Windows server. They want the best applications on there, the latest and greatest. You know, you're trying to run a 64-bit operating system, you know, on a 6-bit or 8-bit server. You know what I mean, though. I mean, you've heard it before, right? You probably even have that in your own business. A lot of times businesses say, we don't want to upgrade the server, but yet everything the business does all day long is on the computer. Shut your server off one day and see how much work people do. They'll do not very much, maybe nothing. Maybe it'd be a 3-hour lunch. Maybe they'll close the building down for the day. But yet management, a lot of times, don't want to put money in that back end operating because nobody sees it and they don't realize how important that back end is. So I said, okay, well, no problem whatsoever, George. I said, you know, we're going to go in there. I'm going to take a look at it. And the first thing I'm going to do is I want to back up your virtual machines. He said, well, what's that going to entail, Jack? What are you doing? I said, first thing we're going to do is we're going to down the virtual machines. All right. So you're going into your VMware vSphere client. And the first thing we did, I told him, get all your users out of the database. They can't be on there. He said, why? I said, we have to turn the server off for a little while to get this copy. If that server bites the dust and blows out, it's going to be a lot harder job than what it is right now. It's a pretty easy, straightforward job if we do it right now. So he said, hey, that's fine. No problem, Jack, at all. We'll just let that go. So what we ended up doing was we went in, we downed the 3 virtual machines that he had. And that was just, we downed the first one, which was the domain controller. And then we downed the application server and the file server. Because when you down the authentication server, right, the Active Directory domain controller, the other ones really don't want to do a whole lot anyway. People are going to start having some weird issues. So down them all so they can't use nothing. That's what you want to do. What we did then was we went in and we created what's called an OVF file. So we went to export. You click on the virtual machine. You go to export. And then you click on this OVF. And you give it a path. And what I would do, I put a path on my desktop on the workstation I was working on. And I used that to pull those machines off that server that's having some issues. It's a physical server. We always talked about this with virtual machines. The physical server can go away. As long as we got the virtual machines, we're good to go. So we pulled the virtual machines off with an OVF file. Now, the larger the machine or the larger, I mean, by the amount of gigabytes that it's taking up, right, or the amount of space that it's taking up, is going to determine how large your VM will be, and it will also determine, I mean, how large the OVF file will be, and it will also determine how long it's going to take to export that off of your computer or off your VM server. So if it's a file server, you know, you might want to tell them to close for the day, tell them go home, go to an early lunch, make the boss take all the workers to dinner, whatever, and you stay and you start doing your work. So just let that go. Now, you're going to back up one at a time. The key thing is make sure they are off. They have to be downed. And you'll know if they're not off because the OVF under the export is grayed out. You can't use it. Now, once you do that, I said back them up to your local hard drive. And now what you'll do is once you get all those off of there, I would suggest to shut the old physical server off so it can't be accessed and so those virtual machines don't accidentally get restarted. Because remember now, you're bringing up 3 virtual machines. Basically, it's the same machine on a different box, but they're all going to have the same names and same network IP addresses. So if you have those running nice, the new ones, and you turn the old box on, and those VMs fire up, it's going to give you a lot of trouble, right? It can knock your servers off the domain because they got the same name. It can deactivate the server so it's not even doing anything, you know, because you have a naming conflict. And worse than that, you have an IP conflict on your network. So either way, it's not a good scenario. So it's 2 things to think about. So anyway, you go to your new server, the nice, shiny, bright new server you put in there, whatever the kind it is, it doesn't really matter. You load up your ESXi on it, get it all set and prepared to go. You go to your VMware vSphere and you log into your new server through that on your desktop. Once you do that, I want you to go to File and then Import, and you're going to import the OVF file into that new server. When you do that, it's going to ask you for a server name. Give it the same name it had before. That's fine. And then import it. And what you are going to find out that the importing takes a lot less time than the exporting did. It just, and I don't know why I haven't figured that out, but it imports relatively quicker than what it exported. So there you go with that. It's just very, very straightforward with it. It's a great way to do that. Now, here's what we're doing now, and I would suggest you're doing this. If you don't have a backup solution, and we're working on a new backup solution right now, actually, but you want a backup solution that will snapshot the virtual machines every night and make a copy of that really and keep it off-site somewhere for you. That's in a perfect world. But what we do now is once a week, you can down that machine. Now, granted, we're backing up the data, and we're backing up the files, okay? So all that stuff is getting backed up every night. What I'm talking about is the virtual machine itself. So just think of it this way. Think if you have a physical server, and you take that physical server, and you clone the hard drive and put it in another exact physical server, and you turn the power button off. Just in case that first one would ever happen, anything happened to it, you click the backup one on, pull the data back from your backups, and your people are starting to work again while you can determine what happened to that other physical server so you can work on it. Our job, a lot of our job in the technology field is to be prepared. To be prepared for that catastrophe when it happens. You don't want to walk in to work. Imagine walking into work one day and somebody going, "Whoa, Frankie, where's your pants?" And you're like, "Oh, crap." So it's the same thing to me. If I walk in, somebody goes, "Hey, Jack, I can't get on the servers. I feel like my pants are around my ankles." Like, oh, crap. You don't want to walk in your server and be like, the server's sitting there smoking. The hard drives blew out of it. They blew across the room. And then you're like scratching your head for 3 days, rebuilding everything. That is not a prepared plan. A prepared plan is once a week, we down those servers, usually on a Friday, later in the afternoon. We'll tell the folks, look, we're going to down a certain server. And we'll pull an OVF file off of it. We put those on a backup, just to use an external hard drive. You know, get a good size one. We copy them onto there just for safekeeping. And then next Friday, we'll do it again, and we'll just overwrite the other ones that we have. The idea behind this is I can put a virtual server up with ESXi 5.5.12, I think they're on now, or 1 or 2. I can have that up in no time at all because it's very quick to load, give it an IP address, and it's ready to go. Then all I got to do is pull these OVF files back, get them up, start them up again, throw the data back in from our data backups, our offsite backups, and I know I have that machine. And if you remember a few weeks ago, we actually talked about disaster recovery or disaster plans. This is a part of that disaster plan. This is the way we like to try to maintain this. If push comes to shove, and let me tell you, push is going to come to shove. You're not going to be able to do this every Friday religiously. Unless you have a crew of 50 technologists in your company, maybe you do. And you can say, "Hey, Lou, come here, Louie." And you can say, "Lou, every Friday you're going to do this," and explain to him, and Lou will do that for you. But what's going to happen is it might not get done every Friday. So here's the ticket with that. Here's what I want to tell you for that. Very simply is, the particular machines that we worked with the client, it's software that they use for medical billing and medical examinations every day of the week. They've been using the same software and the same server for several years now. Well, that's not going to really change. The only thing you may lose is some of your Windows updates. You know, if it's been a virtual server, it's been copied out, and it's been sitting on that hard drive for, say, a couple months. But the core application, the core settings, as long as you never change anything to that server, will be fine. Here's one other key thought when you're backing up virtual machines. If you do make a lot of changes on that server, if you load some printers, because this kind of caught us too. We didn't have the printers on the one we copied. But But if you have some printers, you want those to be loaded up. If you get a new printer, if you load a new printer on it, if you add a couple new users, maybe to remote desktop connection or whatever you're doing with it, take another copy of that. Just tell people, look, it's going to be down for a little bit when we make those changes. Even though in the back of your mind, you're thinking, Jack, I don't need to take that server down. Our clients don't know what we do. Okay, they know we're there. They know we're going to spend time there. They know they're going to get an invoice from us. And they know when we leave, pretty sure they know that everything's just going to work. So if you have all those things together, tell them sometimes it's a little white fib, but say, look, to add users, I'm going to have to down your server maybe for an hour or so. And they don't know why. So add your users, down it, pull a copy, because then if you have to put it back, you have to say, oh, wait, I changed the DNS number. I added three printers. You won't have to do that. You'll have a more current copy. Now, again, that's why you want a backup solution to do that every night for you. It'll just do it for you, and then you'll have that shot that you need in case you have to restore those servers. But anyway, so it's a couple key things to think about. The last topic I want to talk to you about this evening was, oh my goodness, viruses. Viruses, we never get done cleaning this stuff out. Viruses, and we're getting swamped with Trojan horses, just a bunch of malware on the computers, a bunch of, what was the other one here the other night? ICE, I think it's called ICE Government or something, or ICE Security, or what a pain that was. Just when you think you got the computer cleaned up, it pops back on the screen. The camera comes on and wants to take your picture. It has your IP address. It says, look, if you want to get rid of this, you have to pay us money. Please go get some kind of, I don't know what it was called, electronic bucks. Like, it says you get them at the CVS store, so you get them at CVS, a couple of different places, and you apparently pay them money, and then they'll give you a code, and they'll release your computer. Well, you know, I started digging around like any good technology would do, because I'd never seen it before. I started digging around to say, well, how can I fix this? And the fix, sometimes the fix is so close to the front of our face that we don't even know that it's there until you read it and you're like, oh man, I should have tried that first. And it happened again to me actually today with a client. Today it happened and I had to do the same thing and it works flawlessly. What I'm talking about, folks, is System Restore. It's built into every copy of Windows I can remember from, wow, almost all the way back to Windows 98. And make sure, any computer you set up, make sure you turn on System Restore. Sometimes people like to turn it off, like, I'm going to save hard drive space. But you're not going to save the headaches later on when you get one of these ransomwares or something that really takes the computer over. So here's what you do. All you had to do was start the computer. And I had enough time before the big screen came up. And what I did was I kind of tricked it a little bit. I started the computer in safe mode with a command prompt. Once I did that, I typed in the System Restore command. And you can look it up anywhere on the internet. It's a very simple command. Type it in the command window. I hit enter. And a couple seconds later, the screen came up and said, go ahead and restore your system. So I restored it to 2 weeks ago. And remember, folks, if you've never done this before, don't get scared. It doesn't delete all the Word documents and stuff you have on the computer. It just puts the file, the registry and stuff back the way it was 2 weeks ago. If there was any updates, Windows updates to the computer, those will be gone. But you can always reinstall those later on. But what it did do for me was it removed the ICE security thing. It was gone. Didn't have to worry about it anymore. After that, I loaded up, the normal tools. By normal, I use CCleaner. I did have trouble. Somebody was talking the other day about CCleaner 5 is out with the new interface. I thought, wow, that looks really nice. So I downloaded the 64-bit beta version. It's beta for a reason. I would load it up, and every time it would install itself, I couldn't click on anything. Everything was grayed out. The mouse would hover. It was almost like it was a picture of the application on the screen. It wouldn't let me click anything. So I had a lot of trouble with that. So I uninstalled version 5, and I went back to the earlier version, which 4 something, and I took that version, and I was able to run it. Everything got cleaned up, And then, like I said, that's Sea Cleaner, and then Malware Bytes. That's my two kind of go-to anti-malware or anti-spyware tools. And I'm sure if you're in this business, you probably use them every day like we do. Don't you wish you could just run something on your network that would scan the computers and just remove this stuff for you? We need to work on that. And if there's something out there, let me know. I would love to hear about that. So that's what I did. I did a system restore. I got the computer back. It's no longer infected. And it's up and running. And I was able to return to the client, who is very, very happy because they bought a new computer. Now they're going to return a new computer because they don't need it. So many people in this that's not in our business do that also. And I told him, I said, wait a minute. So if you buy a car and your tires get a nail in it, would you go buy a new car? No, you would get the tire fixed or you would replace the tires, but you don't have to replace the whole vehicle. Folks, the computer is the vehicle for us. It holds our applications. It holds our data. It gets us to the internet, the super highway. So it is our vehicle. Just because something goes wrong with it don't mean you have to buy a new one. And I even get that at work all the time. Well, if their computer's running slow, do they need a new one? Should we buy somebody a new computer? No, you shouldn't. I mean, that's when you start having more money than you have common sense. And that's what happens. You've got to think a little bit and say, well, somebody can fix this. And even me, if I'm going to spend $1,000 for a new computer, and if I couldn't do it myself and I had to pay, my going rates is $75 an hour. So if I had to pay $75 to somebody to clean it, it's better than spending $1,000 for a new computer. So anyway, that's my rant. So think about that. And you folks know that's true. You just have to get other people to know it's true also. Well, folks, I hope you've learned something tonight. I know we did a little bit different show tonight. We talked more about the in the trenches stuff, you know, a little bit of down and dirty stuff, a couple different topics I had for you there tonight. So hopefully you're working through your computer issues and your networking problems and getting things taken care of because you listen to this show, and hopefully I'm helping you through those issues. I can't stress enough, and I'm going to stress it again right now. We need your emails. I need your contact. So, and I don't mean your email address. I don't really collect email addresses. I don't really even care if I have it. You can use a self-destructing email address for all I care. What I do want is the two-way street here. I know there's a lot of people downloading this show because our numbers are way, way up. And it's really, really impressive. And as I tell you, guys, every week and girls, I'm very humbled that anybody wants to listen to me talk about this stuff. But anyway, I enjoy doing it and I love to do it, but your way to pay it forward is to send an email every now and then and say, Jack, look, let's talk about this. Or call a voicemail line and say, Jack, I got a great idea for a tool tip of the week, which we didn't have one this week. I'll get you another one next week. We'll talk about a tool tip, or maybe you guys can and girls can call one in. Once again, that number is 724-701-0550. Folks, remember that every podcaster out there needs a little bit of your love. We need you to share a little bit of your hard-earned finances. And you can do that by way of donation. You can donate $100,000 on my website. Just click on Donate Now, and you can put in any number you want in there and donate to the show. Really, I'm kidding. There's not a donate button on this website. But there's an Amazon link. And just think, Amazon doesn't cost you any more than your Amazon order. So if you're going to buy a new tablet, if you're going to buy a new phone, if you're going to buy cleaning products for your house or a pool filter like I bought last summer, use my Amazon link. It can be found at tipsfromtheserverroom.com. If you want to learn anything, but if you want to learn Windows Server 2008, Windows Server 2012, or VMware ESXi. We talked about ESXi tonight during the show. Great program. It's free, and it works extremely well. It's very rock solid. From install to administration, so you want to know this stuff, please sign for one of my online courses. You can sign for those at tipsfromtheserverroom.com. Look for the online class link at the top of the page. Click on that. The courses are self-paced. You watch a short video, and then you take a quiz. Some of them you watch a longer video and you'll take a quiz. Folks, if the quizzes kind of mess with your mind, you're thinking, Jack, I've been to school in 150 years. Don't worry about it. Because here's the truth about those quizzes. The quiz goes exactly along with the video. So if you listen to a quiz, or if you're reading the quiz and you go, I don't know what that answer could be. It could be D or it could be A. Could be D or it could be A. Go back, scrub through the video. What scrubbing means is pull the slider across to find the area where I talk about it, listen again, and answer the question. And it's very, very straightforward, very simplistic. I have had a lot of people out there emailing me the certificates I mailed. They said, Jack, I believe that got me my current job. I've also had people that said, Jack, I simply put that, copy that with my resume, and they send it out because it's showing that you're getting continued education. You can't be in this field for very long if you think you know everything and you haven't taken any more continued education and you've been doing this for 10 years. You need to bone up, just the way life is. We need to learn. There's a lot of new stuff happening in this field every minute. You got to get on top of this stuff. So check those courses out. And right now, go to the website and check it out. Again, it's tipsfromtheserveroom.com. Click on the online link. And if you go into the courses, or if you go to, actually, if you go to classroom.jackstechcorner.com, you'll see in there the classes are marked down right now. They actually dropped them. I dropped them all $50. So you are going to save $50 right now. That's not going to last long. So get in there and sign up for that course now before it goes back up to normal price. Then you'll be like, I should have did it earlier. You folks know how it is. I'm not going to badge you there. Folks, I want you to have a great work week. Thank you so much. You know, you pay it forward to me by just listening to the show and seeing them numbers just increasing every week. You know, you get like 1,000, 3,000 listeners, 4,000 listeners. It's just unbelievable. There's this many technologists out there that want to know more about servers. I did when I started the show. I'm like, I can't find any show that talks about servers and networks and controllers. And I think I'll do that. And you made it really a dream come true. Thank you so much for being here with me. Folks, have a great work week this week. And I will talk to you next Tuesday for another Tips from the Server Room. Take care, my friends. I'll talk to you then. You just listened to Tips from the Server Room with your host, Jack. If you have any questions, please drop me a comment at tipsfromtheserveroom.com. Thanks again for tuning in and downloading the shows. Now sit back, relax, and listen to the remainder of the music. We'll see you next week on Tips from the Server Room. So long.